Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Red Fox Blogger with your host, Kel Fritzy. And how's everybody doing this afternoon? I hope you're doing wonderful. I'm having not a bad day. I want to talk to you about what's going on in Sweden today. Now, as you know, there have been Islamic riots going on in Sweden for over a week now, well over a week. The car burnings, vandalism. Why is this going on? Well, you know, there's a lot of people out there who will say, as usual, poverty, lack of education, so on and so forth. No. It's going on because Muslims just do that. They ride everywhere. What's the latest excuse, though, that they're using? The death of a middle-aged man? Who knows? Where was it in the UK when they were rioting? What was the excuse? Two youths? One killed by a police officer? No. I'm telling you, those are excuses. Those are the excuses they look for. The real reason why the riots are going on is because they simply can riot and nobody will do a thing about it. We have people in Sweden who are trying to fight back to protect their very own properties and their very own lives. And they're the ones who are being arrested by the local authorities. So why do Muslims riot? And why are they rioting in Sweden? Because they can. And they're getting away with it. I'm so sick and tired of these attempts to explain these carefully planned Muslim riots. Especially now around Sweden. Like I say, all the apologists are coming out of the woodwork and they are blaming it on poverty, lack of education, lack of jobs. Thus, they are engaging in the intifada or rebellion or resistance, if you like. We usually see things like kidnappings and demands for ransom everywhere else in the world. And we see this a lot with Islamic adherents. But the violent men and women around Stockholm, they haven't demanded any money. No, they haven't expressed a wish for free education. Nothing like that, no. But what we're seeing is a repetition of patterns that appear everywhere in history in the world today, where there are a large number of Muslims who live in non-Islamic areas. Muslims attack the authorities representing secular non-Islamic law. And, of course, it's always accompanied with the Allah Akbar. But Muslims, they're not embracing the host country. They want Islamic law, i.e. Sharia. They want their Sharia courts. They want their minarets. They want their own government. We are having problems in the UK pertaining to Islamic no-go zones and Muslim gangs literally enforcing their own Sharia laws on the very streets of London. You cannot walk in certain neighborhoods, and this is now not only restricted to the UK, as you are well aware. This is going on all over Europe. We're seeing a lot of this in the United States as well. So why are they rioting in Sweden? Simple, because they can. Because that's what they do. That is what Islam is. I have something here for you. Let me see if I can bring it down. Let me see. There are a lot of politicians, though, who are trying to address the issue here in Canada, for example. Our Prime Minister, Stephen Harper, he is trying to address the issue of immigration, Islamic immigration. We have a problem in Canada, like everywhere else. We're recognizing that. There are politicians in Sweden who are trying to do the same thing, to recognize the Islamic immigration issue. There is one in particular. His name is Tobias Billstrom. He's the Minister of Immigration. He put a suggestion out there that, hey, you know, the Islamic population, it's kind of growing, guys. And so he suggested that they put a lid on the immigration madness. Now, they also say that is another reason why the riots in Muslim are going on, because there are politicians who are actually trying to stand up and do something about this. But it doesn't seem to be working out too well, because Tobias Billstrom, he is now the subject of death threats. He's getting threats via Twitter. There's one here from Christopher Hurtig, in which he said, "I want to shoot Tobias Billstrom. I really look forward to the day he dies. From the depth of my heart, I really mean it." There are approximately 574,000 Muslims in Sweden, and that is comprising the population at 6.05%. Sweden alone has experienced a population growth of 5.6% in the last 8 years. This is mainly due to Muslim immigration, Muslim illegal aliens, asylum seekers, and the high fertility rates that Muslims also bring with them. Sweden has one of the fastest growing Islamic populations in the Western world at this point, guys. It's getting very, very dire over there. Now, like I say, they expect that the population will double in Sweden and Denmark in 14 years. There was previously projected data on the rapidly growing Muslim population, and this was based on UK's Muslim growth numbers. These numbers are fairly accurate. The UK format, it's important, as it is well documented, and appears to be quite similar in all Muslim communities across Europe, irrespective of the countries. What does this mean for the future, though, for Europe and Sweden in particular? Well, it means that Sweden's Muslim population will reach 40% by 2030. France will have a 55% Muslim population. The Netherlands will have a 45% Muslim population. Germany, 40%. Britain, 40%. These countries, guys, are going to cease to exist as a Western democracy if these demographics keep rising. But like I say, in Sweden in particular, it is a very, very, very bad situation. And something else, too, I don't know if you're aware of this, but Sweden was one of the first countries in Europe to allow the blaring of the minarets. You've heard, what is that? That is the call to prayer. Let me see. I've got it right here for you guys. This is in Stockholm. They have, not yet, buddy. In Stockholm, they have allowed a minaret to blare a call to prayer every Friday for about 5 minutes, I believe from noon to one. I'll let this person tell you himself.
A mosque mosque in Stockholm has become the first in Sweden to sound prayer calls from its minaret after getting permission from police earlier this month. Though there are mosques in all major cities in Sweden, the one in Fitja, where many residents are immigrants from Muslim countries, was the first to request permission for prayer calls. The call to prayer at the Fitja Mosque is permitted for 3 to 5 minutes on Fridays from midday to 1 p.m.
So there you go. I'm just wondering how soon will that be coming to a town near you? Is this something that we can look forward to? Like I say, it's bad in Sweden, and nobody is paying attention. This is really unbelievable. This is either being underreported, drastically underreported, or not being reported at all in the mainstream media. Sweden is under siege, and nobody is doing anything about it. When the locals try to do something about it, they are the ones who are arrested, like I say. Multiculturalism is a big fail. Multiculturalism is failing in Sweden. Sorry about that. It is not working out. We're seeing that in Canada now, where we are officially multiculturalism. We're experiencing that. We are seeing that it's not working. Islam is not like any other culture. Islam is an entity upon itself. Islam will not assimilate into the host country. And Sweden, they're finding out the hard way how true that is.
Sweden could be paying a tough price for its policies on immigrants and multiculturalism. A Stockholm suburb erupted into violence for a few hours as crowds of angry, masked youth from migrant families burned cars, smashed windows, and hurled stones at police officers. What's believed to have fueled the riot was the death of a 69-year-old man allegedly shot by police in the area last week. So to discuss how the mood might be changing in the heart of Scandinavia, we're now joined live from the Swedish capital by Mark Abramson, who's chairman of the National Democrats Party. Ms. Abramson, thanks so much for joining us here on RT to discuss this. Well, we normally have the image in our minds of Stockholm as a very calm, placid city. So how surprised were you to see those riots, angry youth setting cars and buildings ablaze?
Well, thank you. Well, I was not that surprised anymore, but this is fairly new to Sweden. And this is a clear consequence of this multiculturalism politics that Sweden adapted around the 80s and increased it in the 90s. And now we are seeing these problems, that this politics is not working. And we have seen this. This is not a unique one single occasion. We have seen this in Gothenburg, in Malmö several times, and even in the city where I am elected councillor in Södertälje, in Ronna, we have this ethnical-based riots against Swedish authorities. So this, I wasn't surprised, but we have seen this in Western Europe. It's very sad, and I think we'll see more of this if we don't change the politics in the future.
Well, let's take a look at this particular neighborhood, and it's 80% immigrant residents, and the trouble flared after a police killed an elderly man there. Obviously, these people feel they're not protected by the police. Don't they have a right to be heard?
Well, I think that the problem beneath this, it can be different things. This time it was this man that was arrested and resisted and then was killed. And we have other things that happen on other places. But the main reason is that they don't identify themselves with the Swedish society or as Swedes, but they are their own ethnical group. They live in their area and they feel this area as their own. And when the police arrive, they feel that the police are intruding into their sort of country, if you would like to.
So how did that happen? What led to that? Sorry for interrupting you, but what led to that? How did they their neighborhood or the community where they live turn into a sort of ghetto-type dwelling there? What about the integration policies? Is the government doing anything at all to integrate the immigrants?
Yes, I think that Sweden has been trying harder than any other country in Europe to try to push for integration. We have invested virtually billions into it and of taxpayers' money. We have tried everything that the scientists has presented, and still it's not working. And the problem, the core here is that these people, they don't identify themselves as, they identify themselves as their own ethnic group, and they see to the interest of their group. And with the second generation, it's even worse, because they are in between the Swedish society and their parents' society, if you'd like to, and it's clearly not working. It's not working in Sweden, it's not working in France or in the United States. This is something we'll see more of, and I don't think it's solvable to integrate this huge influx. If it was just a couple of people, of course, but this is not. This is what we have in Sweden today is a immigration stream that is so huge that it's we have no roof. There's nothing that says we will accept this many, or we can accept 10,000 or 1,000, but it's unlimited. And that is basically, I think this is the really what is escalating, because they want to live with their own people, their own ethnic group. They seek actively to live with their own group. So they concentrate themselves to these areas, and then they feel like they have their own little town in Sweden, and they don't accept or identify with the Swedish authorities. And this is just getting. We have seen this for several years coming up with police cars. When they are to work in these areas, there have to be two cars, one protecting the other when they're working in these areas. People are trying to maintain buildings, have to have guards, security guards. The fire department can't work. We have seen this in Malmö before when they get attacked by angry immigrant youth that feels like they are intruding into their own area, even though they're trying to help. And this is basically not, it's not about bad or good people. It's just a consequence of this politics. And what we would like to see instead is that safe havens, that we help people in their own countries or in neighboring countries.
I understand, Mark. No, unfortunately, we'll have to, running out of time, we'll have to leave it there. But thanks for talking to us here in RT and letting us know what you think on this issue. That was Mark Abramson, the chairman of the National Democrats Party.
So as you can see, yes, they are in a lot of trouble. Now, I have an article here I want to share with you. And this is from Al Kornman. Now, you know Al Kornman as the co-host with Vito Esposito right here on Blog Talk Radio, Radio Jihad Network. As a matter of fact, he will be on at 6 p.m. tonight, so try to be here for that. He wrote a very good article about how to defeat Islam legally. Yeah, legally. You can defeat terrorism, Islam, in America without firing a shot. Like I say, this article is by Alan Kornman. It's from May 29th of 2013. It is in the Family Security Matters, so please go and look for it there. He believes that the Muslim Brotherhood's top spiritual leader, Yusuf Qaradawi, has been banned from entering the United States since 1999. That is true. Qaradawi, he called for attacks on U.S. troops and civilians, death to all Jews, and for the collapse of the United States. Hatred of America is the spiritual core of the Muslim Brotherhood. And as articulated by its spiritual leader, when someone says they wish to cause you harm, you better believe them. How do you cripple terrorism, though, in America without firing a shot? Well, if the American people want our elected officials and law enforcement to cripple Islamic terrorism without having to fire a shot, it can be done in three easy steps, okay? Step one, declare the Muslim Brotherhood a foreign terrorist organization. Step two, publicly name all the Muslim Brotherhood affiliates operating in the United States based on evidence submitted during the Holy Land Foundation terrorist funding trial. 3. The foreign terrorist organization designation will trigger a provision of law allowing the Treasury Department and FBI to shut down all Muslim Brotherhood subgroups operating in the United States, confiscate their records, assets, real estate, freeze bank accounts, then jail and or deport all individuals associated with the Muslim Brotherhood. Now, what is the designation of foreign terrorist organizations? The Secretary of State, in consultation with the Secretary of the Treasury and the Attorney General, are authorized to designate an organization as a foreign terrorist organization in accordance with A, the organization is a foreign organization, B, the organization engages in terrorist activity as defined in Section 1182A3B of this title, or terrorism as defined in Section 2656D2 of the Title 22, or retains the capability and intent to engage in terrorist activity or terrorism. C. The terrorist activity on terrorism of the organization threatens the security of the United States, nationals, or the national security of the United States itself. Now, why is there a case for the Muslim Brotherhood to be granted FTO status? Because, well, first of all, listen to the Muslim Brotherhood motto. Allah is our objective. The Prophet is our leader. The Quran, our constitution. Jihad, our way. And dying in the way of Allah is our highest hope. Allahu Akbar. Now, if that's not good enough for you, I don't know what is, guys. The United States became the victim of high-profile Islamic terrorism on February 26, 1993, with the bombing of the World Trade Center. The mastermind of this attack on America was Sheikh Omar Abdul Rahman, a.k.a. the Blind Sheikh. Egypt's Muslim Brotherhood President, Mohamed Morsi, has proclaimed repeatedly he wishes to gain the release of Muslim Brotherhood operative Omar Abdel Rahman. Muslim Brotherhood leader Morsi's support for the Blind Sheikh ties the Brotherhood directly to Al-Gamas al-Islama, also known as a MAD Islamic group, designated a foreign terrorist organization in 1997. However, it was mysteriously delisted as so in 2010. I wonder why that was. Obama. On December 15th of 2010, Secretary of State Clinton delisted the GIA under, like I say, mysterious circumstances. And this, of course, happened as the overthrow of Hosni Mubarak by the Muslim Brotherhood was in play. So make of that what you will. Now, what about the GIA in the military wing of the Muslim Brotherhood and the Blind Sheikh? Is its leader, second in charge of the MB military wing, was A.M. al-Zawahiri, who later became al-Qaeda's number two behind Osama bin Laden. John Gunadolo would call this a clue. The Muslim Brotherhood poses a national security risk to the United States of America. So true is that. In July of 2007, seven key leaders of an Islamic charity known as the Holy Land Foundation for Relief and Development went on trial for charges that they had A, provided material support and resources to a foreign terrorist organization, namely Hamas, and B, engaged in money laundering, and C, breached the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, which prohibits transactions that threaten American national security. The most significant of these was an explanatory memorandum on the general strategic goal for the group in North America, and of course, we know this as the Muslim Brotherhood's playbook. This is, like I say, by the Muslim Brotherhood's operative himself, Mohammed Akram. Federal investigators found Akram's memo in the home of Ismail al-Barasi, a founder of the Dar al-Hijjah Mosque in Falls Church, Virginia, during a 2004 search. Al-Barasi was a member of the Palestinian Committee, which the Muslim Brotherhood had created to support Hamas in the United States. Now, we have so much evidence on the Muslim Brotherhood and the Holy Land Foundation, there is absolutely no reason why we can totally obliterate one arm of terrorism with these very easy steps. Three easy steps, guys, and boom, we will be able to accomplish a lot. Like I say, step one, declare the Muslim Brotherhood a foreign terrorist organization. Step two, publicly name all the Muslim Brotherhood affiliates operating in the United States and based on the evidence submitted during the Holy Land Foundation's terrorist funding trial. And three, the FTO designation will trigger a provision of law allowing the Treasury Department and FBI to shut down all Muslim Brotherhood subgroups operating in the United States. They can confiscate their records, their assets, real estate, freeze bank accounts, then jail, and or deport all individuals associated with the Muslim Brotherhood. It is so simple. My goodness. And you know what? It can be done. If we have politicians out there with the fortitude that can stand up and say, yes, the Muslim Brotherhood, it's a problem. They can operate within the law, within the Constitution of the United States, and this can be accomplished. Will it be accomplished? I don't know. I don't think so, especially not under the Obama administration. But you know what? This is at least one step in the right direction. Okay, I am down to my last 3 minutes, but before I shut down, I'd rather do a shout-out. That's what I want to say. Now, I know it's a little bit of a short notice, but Pamela Geller is organizing a rally tomorrow, okay? Tomorrow, June, is the 4th of June. Like I say, short notice, but Pamela Geller is organizing a rally for free speech, okay? It's taking place at 5:30 p.m., Manchester Coffee County Conference Center at 147 Hospitality Boulevard in Manchester, Tennessee. If you guys can manage, if you're in the area, please try to be there. This is for freedom of speech. Freedom of speech is under attack in the United States, and Pamela Geller and others, they're going to do something about that. Like I say, try to be there tomorrow if you can, if you are in the Manchester, Tennessee area, or at least spread this to your friends, please. Put it on your Facebook, your Twitter accounts. At 5:30 p.m., Manchester Coffee County Conference Center, 147 Hospitality Boulevard in Manchester, Tennessee. There will be speakers there as well. So try to get that word out. If you need more information, please go to Atlas Shrugs. All the information is right there. This was posted yesterday. So go to atlasshrugs.com. Go there. All the info you need is there. You can copy and paste this and send it out to all your friends. Let them know, okay? Well, thank you guys very much. On that note, I am out of here. I want to thank you all for joining me. I wish that I could thank you all in the chat room, but I can't see the chat room. But if you're out there, thanks. I want to thank you all who are listening on the phone and other devices. And I also want to remind you, please visit my blog, redfoxblogger.blogspot.com. I will have more information up there for you as well. Okay, guys, thanks a lot. Have a great day, and I'll see you on Thursday.